Yeah, I'm David Adam Moore.
Yeah, all right. So let's start with kind of the genesis of the music, the singing for you. Where did this start? Where did this all start for you?
Well, I grew up in a musical family. My family are country western musicians from Southeast Texas, and I come from a small town down there called Vider near the Louisiana border. So I had, I think maybe five or six generations before me were all professional musicians. And so I grew up listening to my dad make music and my grandfather. Both were nightclub musicians, and then eventually my dad became a road musician for Tracy Byrd, who is a kind of a top 10 country western artist who was very popular in the 90s and early 2000s. I grew up, and then my other grandfather was a Cajun musician. He played harmonica and sang. So I grew up around people making music, so for me to go into music in some way or other was a very intuitive thing to do. I was always more interested in different kinds of music, though. I never really got into country or Cajun. I was very interested in like electronic dance music and electronic pop music and things like that. And then as a teenager, I got very interested in classical music and became very fascinated with that. And when it came time to go to college, I came very close to enlisting in the Army, but my other option was to take a sort of a modest scholarship to the music department of Lamar University in Beaumont, Texas. Excuse me a second. So I became a voice major, and that was my first time to study music formally. It was my first time to take voice lessons, to learn about music theory or the history of Western music or anything like that, and I became very, very fascinated with that. And then things sort of took a natural course from there. I met an influential voice teacher, more of a vocal pedagogue, named Richard Miller, who had written many books on the teaching of singing and on singing technique and such. And I had read his books as textbooks in my classes at Lamar, and I had a chance to participate in one of his workshops. And when I did, I expressed to him that I was interested in going to a more performance-oriented school at that point in time, and he invited me to study with him at Oberlin Conservatory. And that's where I really started to learn how to focus my voice and to support my voice. And, you know, that's when I really started to learn how to put together that toolkit one needs to become a professional singer. And I'd say from that point, especially, things took a very sort of typical course. Although, I mean, you know, if you talk to any professional opera singer, each journey is completely individual, and we've all gotten to this from a very wide variety of paths.
I have to ask how your folks, the family feels now about, coming from country roots, Cajun roots, how they feel about the opera.
Well, they love to watch me make music, you know, and they're excited about the idea that I'm making music. It took them a little while to kind of come around to an understanding of what I'm doing, because I'm the only one who left that area of Texas. So a lot of them haven't been able to come to any of my performances, or they haven't come to many. Now my dad follows me around quite a bit, and he's come to see me sing all over the world by this point. In fact, he might be coming here to Nashville, but especially my other family members, for them, when it really sunk in was when I sang the national anthem at an NFL game. I sang the national anthem at a Seattle Seahawks game some time ago, and all of a sudden, I'd made it big in their minds, you know. And, yeah. And up to that point, I mean, for me, the biggest deal of all was of my entire path really was getting into Oberlin, because I barely squeaked in. And from there, it was more up to me, because I was able to, I finally got to a place where I could get the training that was sufficient to do this thing. But I got into Oberlin. I had a major international debut fairly early on with Israeli opera. I sang the role of Billy Budd there in Britain's opera Billy Budd. And so all these other things had happened. And my family would still ask me when I came home during holidays. I had an aunt who asked me, "David, are you still doing them plays?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm still doing those plays." And she's like, "Well, when are you going to quit that? Are you going to get a job sometime, right?" And but the NFL game was what did it.
Something that was a little more culturally relevant for them.
Well, exactly, and that's really what it is. And this speaks to. This speaks to a larger phenomenon in the way that Americans tend to relate to classical music and opera and where it fits in our culture. I think it's still very much seen as an exoticism. And I've certainly made it a mission within my career to try to fix that, to try to do things. I always try to make choices when I'm able to that are going to bring my performances or the productions that I'm in or the things that I decide to do into a form that is more relatable to audiences.
Yeah.
So that people don't feel so much distance. And I don't mean to dumb it down by any means at all, but I just think it's very important for all of us to realize that, the art form of opera itself is a massively powerful art form. It's the largest scale unamplified art form in existence. And it's developed over hundreds and hundreds of years throughout a variety of different cultures. So I think it's important that we see it as more of a universal thing and really shake off the stigma of being elitist or very foreign or somehow stylized or inaccessible.
Yeah, yeah. I understand you've been singing Don Giovanni quite widely. What is it about that part that you find rewarding professionally?
Well, I think it's one of the greatest operas written. Period. I think it's one of the most successful operas in terms of its musico-dramatic writing. In terms of the way its drama is perfectly infused in the music itself, structurally, formally, it's such a perfect work of art. I think the story is very interesting and very universal. It started out in Europe as in Spain actually as a Christian morality play to show good Christians what not to do. to show this young man who has, incredibly licentious behavior and who just does what he wants without regard for anyone, and then at the end he gets dragged to hell. But I think it taps into something universal in all of us, because I think everyone has a subconscious Don Giovanni. Everyone has this drive inside them that wants to just pursue sensual pleasure. Deep inside wants to just do whatever they want to without regard for anyone else. And of course, we have to contain that in order to be good human beings, in order to be decent people and to treat others the way we'd want to be treated. But people have a subconscious need and a subconscious desire to see that kind of behavior exercised on stage. And Don Giovanni does that very effectively, and it's done that for generations and generations of people over hundreds of years now. In many different countries and languages, and so I love the universality of it.
Yeah, tell me what's both rewarding and challenging about moving city to city and performing that opera with different companies.
That's a really good question. I mean, I would say certainly what's rewarding about that is the opportunity to look at it from many different angles. And to pick up little, you know, and every time you do a production of the same opera, you pick up little elements from the root of the character. You know, when you're really getting down to what drives this character, or what are the realities of the particular situation that the plot's taking place in, things that aren't so open to interpretation, or things that are a little beyond the scope of interpretation, you pick these things up, and you can carry them from production to production, and they can really build your experience of realizing this character and living in the skin of this character, so to speak. So that's one thing that's very rewarding about, and particularly with this character, who I find very, very fascinating. And then, you know, the challenging thing, it's stupid, simple things like, you know, you'll remember one thing from one production, one little action or behavior you did in a certain scene, but then, you know, in the next production, the director wants to do something entirely different, and maybe it'll feel like it doesn't work as well, or maybe it's just so different, and you're habitually wanting to do the other thing, you know, the thing that you've done before. But I mean, I don't find that to be so challenging or problematic. I'd say overall, my experience in repeating roles like this is very positive.
Yeah.
In the first 5 years of my career, I spent all those years virtually without repeating any roles at all, and so I was just constantly learning new roles. I think there was one year when I learned 10 new roles, and so not having to do that, I mean, not having to, you know, visit this one character and then leave it and then go visit another character, being able to actually live in the same piece of music, because these things are just so damn hard to learn, and they take a long time and a lot of effort. It's really great to be able to repeat something. And particularly in my voice type, as a baritone, we tend to have a pretty wide range of repertoire. I mean, there are some voice types like dramatic tenors, dramatic sopranos. A lot of them can make their entire living off of like 5 or 8 roles, and they just repeat those over and over again. So they'll tell you the opposite thing. They'll be like, I'm so sick of doing Tosca, or I'm so sick of doing this or that. But in my case, I mean, my resume got up to 20 roles pretty quickly, and now it's somewhere in the 60s the last time I counted. And I'm still very much in the first half of my career, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's all the questions that that I have. I just will close by asking, is there anything else about the experience or about being in Nashville that you'd like to mention before we stop?
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool to be in a city that's so musically oriented. When my father was touring with Tracy Byrd, I would come here and visit him from time to time, and he would take me around to these little clubs. And is it on Broadway? Is that where they are?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would take me to these little clubs with virtuoso musicians playing, and he would play in some of these clubs himself, and he would sit in with people like these legendary musicians like Reggie Wooten, and, you know, this really cool, eclectic mix of road musicians who would get together and play the music that they enjoy the most, as opposed to playing the music that they were, you know, gigging on. And so yeah, I have a lot of really wonderful associations with this city. And also in my mind, I mean, as a kid growing up in Texas in a country music family, you know, Nashville was just like Hollywood or something. You know, it was like the place where people would go to make their dreams come true. And so for me to come here with the type of music that I love the most, and to be able to share this